The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks, our anniversary show. Yay! I can't believe I've been doing this for a year. It feels like 10. Thanks, everyone, for joining us this week. It's a big show. We've got some of your most favorite guests on the show this week. It promises to be a lot of fun. One of the reasons I do this show is just because I get to speak to all my mates regularly on the show, and we talk about disruption and a lot of really interesting stuff. So let's go ahead here. We've got Jim Morales on the line. Jim, say hello.
Hello, Brett. Hi, everybody.
And we've got Bradley Limer.
How you doing, Brett?
Welcome back to the show, Brad. Alex Sion is on.
Hey, Brett. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. And Ron Shevlin was on a second ago, but he's dropped off somehow. We're going to try and get him back on. We'll try and figure out how to do that as we progress. So let's get started, guys. I wanted to talk about the theme of the show is, you know, in the last year, we've been talking about a lot of disruptions, a lot of things that are happening, a lot of the trends that are going to take place. So what I thought we'd do for the anniversary show is take a look back at the previous year and sort of figure out, you know, what's happened in the last 12 months that either has been really exciting, that you guys have thought has been significant, or when we look back in 10 years' time, we'll say, hey, you know, you remember when this happened back in 2013? That was a game changer. So, what are your thoughts? What do you think's happened in the last 12 months that has been pretty significant in the fintech space? Maybe, Jim, you want to go first?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the exciting things, I guess, was the fact that mobile's becoming – it already was, but I think it's becoming much more front and center. Other industries are helping to drive that, as the consumers as well. And I think the financial industry is really starting to realize that mobile is going to take the place of a lot of the channels, or at least supplement a lot of the channels that are currently there. And I think the one trend that I probably thought would have happened more in the last year that didn't was actually the adjustment of the brand system. We haven't seen much. We've heard a lot about it. But as we all know, the numbers of branches really haven't changed significantly. But I think
everyone's preparing for it. But
that's exactly right.
Yeah. What about you, Alex?
Yeah, to me, I think it's really been riding the cycle of kind of what was in the early part of the year, an enormous explosion of disruptive startups, right, sort of that entered the space when payments across retail banking, across just about anything category you can think of within financial services. And then what has happened, I think, in the past couple of months has been basically a sobering of that, right? You know, the understanding that there is, you know, the explosion to be proved that there was demand for disruption. And what has been sort of a recent sobering of that trend, to me, has proven that the business models are hard, right? At the end of the day, there's broad consumer and infrastructural need for change, but how to affect that change in a business model that can actually stick and have global impact is the thing people are now struggling for. So that's been really interesting to see for the course of the year.
Mm-hmm. Brad, what about you? Do you think we've sort of hit that inflection point where it's no longer a debate about if digital will disrupt, but most most practitioners are now like, we're firmly in that disruptive phase?
Yeah, I mean, I think the impact has been felt from the number of institutions that we've seen sort of merge and consolidate in the industry to really the unbundling of everything from the infrastructure to the overall experience of having a bank account. You know, everything has changed. I look at, you know, the larger themes that we've seen in the past year and the larger things like data breaches and the target mess and what's happening in payments. Is partly a reaction to that sort of trust that shifted a bit between financial institutions and the other providers that can do similar services in the space.
Absolutely. So, Ron, welcome back on the line.
Thanks, Brett. Thanks for having me on.
So, what about you from a researcher perspective? You know, is there any big numbers that stand out over the last 12 years? You know, what do you think has been the most impactful or the most interesting, you know, from a trending perspective?
You said 12 years.
In the last 12 months. Sorry.
Yeah, because we can go back 12 years, but we need a lot more time. So a couple of things stand out for me. I think a lot of this stuff has been building more than just the past 12 months, but I think it's really come to a head in the past 12 months. And a couple of things in particular. First is that I think there's a strong recognition among financial institution, retail banking perspective. The mobile channel is the new.
You think it's sort of now considered, it's at that mature point where it's almost a hygiene factor?
I think it's more than just a hygiene factor. I think it's more than just sort of mobile banking and account access. It's really more about trying to figure out how can the financial institutions add more value to consumers, make it easier to manage their financial lives, or find new ways to add value, new things to do thanks to having a device that people carry at all times. And I think part of that is also being evidenced by a big shift in marketing dollars away from traditional media channels to digital, online, and mobile in particular. But in a lot of the stuff that I've looked at over the past 6 months or so from a marketing investment perspective, it's clear that there's some big shifts among lots of institutions, not just the large ones, from traditional media channels towards the digital.
Mm. Jim, in respect to the sort of the marketing angle, we saw a big stat this year, of course, that Google generated more ad revenue. Last year actually, Google generated more ad revenue than all of the print media combined. How do you think bank marketing departments are adapting to this digital shift and the change in the funnel?
You know, it's interesting. I think one of the biggest challenges is that traditional marketers weren't trained in where they're going in digital marketing and in all the online space. And I think we're seeing a major movement, as you said, with Google, but also I think bank marketers are going to have to look at Facebook as a source of information. I mean, they have an ad group now that is going to be able to sell information on customers and prospects of what customers look like from a behavioral basis. So I think that's a major shift, and I think I think Ron will attest to the fact, and everyone else will, that the merging, or at least the partnership between the CIO and the CMO has never been more important. They can't stand on separate islands anymore.
Yeah. Alex, in terms of some of the more innovative approaches to onboarding, acquisition, and sort of the risk process, sort of that front-end experience, what have you seen this year that sort of stood out in your mind as really innovative approaches to the problem of onboarding a customer?
Yeah, no, I think a lot of it is having to do with moving towards an app-centric, mobile-centric approach to engaging customers from the get-go. We'll pat ourselves on the back, but in moving, the concept of being able to download the app as the first part of the engagement becomes a central tenet to a lot of these kind of new onboarding processes. And when you are essentially working from the metaphor of an app and the app sign-up process, then all of a sudden the bar becomes much higher, right, in terms of not only the ability for the customer to frictionlessly sign up, but the ability for the customer to get value from the process before jumping through a lot of different hoops. So in effect, as the world has moved more towards app and mobile, you've got leaner, lighter sign-up processes, and you've got, you know, in some way segmented sign-up processes that allow you to stop at certain points, consider and see some value out of the out of a product or process, and then start up at another point. So very different than, you know, sort of branch-based, typical, you know, physical world product distribution.
Mm. Brad and Ron, you guys talk a lot about, both of you talked about the primary financial application. I still can't figure out which of you has a trademark, but, how does this require what's a shift does this require institutionally to understand the implications of that shift from being the primary FI with a branch network to now figuring out how to own engagement on a day-to-day basis on the handset?
Well, let me jump in before Ron goes on, because I know it could be the rest of the show. when I think of a primary financial application, you know, what I'm really thinking about is how can we derive value for the customer at the transaction level? And Ron actually wrote about an example that I gave earlier this year where BillGuard notified me that there was a data breach at the DMV in California before any of my institutions did. And in fact, since then, BillGuard was the only application that actually had a read on my transactions and gave me that warning. And so I look at partnerships with companies like that offer singular points of engagement that you could embed within your applications in order to derive value that the customer understands. You know, at Finovate, we saw things like Ondot, which allows card control categorically or via geofence. And that, again, you know, provides a customer added value on behalf of the financial institution's brand and really, you know, shows that it's more than just going into your application, moving some money around, and, oh, yeah, I've got some money to spend. It's looking out for that customer and what their transactional history really means going forward.
Yep. Hey, Ron, what do you think?
So I love the concept of the and I think that's right on, but I think a lot of bankers may misinterpret what that really means, because it isn't about the big honking app that's, you know, only used to be the online banking platform, and now it's the mobile banking platform. For different consumers, the app may be very different, and it may be have very specific functionality. For the primary app, might be tracking rewards points. For another consumer, the primary app might be something that simply tracks and categorizes spending. So there's different types of apps that could emerge app. And I think the financial brand survey that I worked with Jim and with Jeff Pilcher on a couple of months ago, we actually found that about half of FI's continuous strategy of sort of building everything into a single mobile app, and I think to prove out to be the wrong direction to take.
But yeah. And just to carry on that point for a minute, look at what we're seeing outside of fintech. You know, while there's all this investment in fintech, we're seeing singular app production. And while we like to think that a single bank can have that primary financial application, you know, Ron's right. It's not the Swiss Army knife that a customer then chooses what they'd like to use within it. Facebook decides, you know, we're going to do some stuff with photos, and they buy Instagram because they decide they can't do it. They try to launch a messaging app, and they buy WhatsApp for $16 billion. So you'll see, I think, more of that within financial services as well, is that whether it's partnering or whether it's buying outright, you need to think singularly about some of those applications as well.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, listen, let's have a quick break. And after the break, we can continue talking about some of the highlights in terms of some of the disruptors that have emerged over the last 12 months. You're with Brett King. We're on Breaking Banks, our anniversary edition. We'll be right back after this break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's KONY.com/BK.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
You're back with Breaking Banks, our anniversary edition. And at this point, we would like to welcome to the show best-selling author, Chris Skinner from London. Welcome.
Hey, Brett. How you doing?
Good, good. Welcome to the show. Glad you could join us. It's the All-Star Show today.
Until now.
Yes, well, we did have to lower the... No, I'm just joking. No. So, Chris, we were talking before the break about some of the developments that have happened and sort of the role of or this mindset shift of, you know, whereas smartphones an emerging channel to sort of it's arrived and how do we fix it. But in terms of the disruptions that have occurred this year, is there anything that's particularly stood out in your mind as some of the new players that have sort of got on the map this year that have really done something interesting or different?
I mean, to a large extent, there's a lot of things happening, and most of it is really just absorbing the technologies, experimenting with them, thinking about wearable, thinking about the Internet of Things. Whereas what's been the standout for me is the relationship that I've now developed with mBank in Poland. And the reason it stands out is that they've created a completely mobile, social, digital bank embedded in Facebook with P2P payments through mobile, etc. But it's a traditional bank. They've thrown away the traditional bank. They've rebranded completely as mBank, which has been around for a while, but now it's the core bank. The main brand before was Brebank, which they've actually made obsolete. And the critical thing that they raise is they've got 4.5 million users of the bank, and suddenly these users, 4.5 million, are transitioning rapidly to digital banking, which is not therefore a new startup. It's a incumbent bank that's completely turned the model on its head. And most banks just think of digital as another channel. You know, it's about omni-channel, it's another channel. Whereas mBank actually says, no, you know what, this is actually the way to build the bank. You have to build it on the digital platform. It's not a channel.
Yeah, the only other bank that's sort of done that is Fedor, that's sort of pure play in that respect. But mBank...
But again, it's a startup rather than an existing bank.
Right, yeah, and that's the very interesting thing, because mBank made that strategic decision to walk away from their old physical network and what that entailed.
Yeah, I mean, that's the critical thing. That I haven't seen any other bank yet that said, you know what, Sam, we've got 4.5 million customers, we've got branch network, but we're going to throw the whole lot away and get those customers onto being digital as a strategic decision that's the core of turning the bank on its head. You know, I mean, there's new startups, but in the incumbent banks, they're the only one I've seen that's done that.
Yeah, yeah. Jim and Brad, Ron, you can jump in as well. Do you think there's any banks in the U.S. that could be candidates to do something like what mBank has done?
Well, you know, I think...
Silence says it all. Go ahead, Jim.
I just think that the purchase is simple by BBVA. is an interesting starting point, if nothing else. But I think you'd almost have to find a mid-range bank that can transition. The challenge is going to still be the legacy core systems. You know, there's very few banks that have invested in new core systems that really I think are needed to do what MBank's done, to do what Fedora's done, to do what Hello and some of the others have done. And I think that's the biggest challenge out there.
Yeah. What about Ron? What do you think?
I think that what MBank did is pretty – would find it hard to think of any sizable institution in the U.S. kind of turning on the dock.
Oh, we appear to have lost Ron. So it looks sounded like he flamed out or crashed and burned. But
he's been lost for years, Brett.
Brad, what are your thoughts? What do you think in terms of?
I think that you're looking at some pretty big bank brands already having pretty good success in digital. But you know, I wouldn't say that a Chase or Wells Fargo with 14, 16 million mobile users is really changing the game like an MBank is. But really, numbers mean something. You know, what we saw this week with the sort of email leak with Simple was, even if you count 114,000 or 33,000, you know, sort of active customers of a mobile-only bank in the United States, it's still just a drop in the bucket compared to even an average-sized financial institution. There's, I think, a slower shift happening in some ways in traditional banking versus digital banking in the United States. And I think it has a lot to do with legacy platforms, has a lot to do with sort of the change in thinking that's just now really taking root over the last 2 or 3 years. And so, you know, it's one of those we'll see. But there's a lot of really interesting things going on.
But, you know, one of the unique problems in the U.S. is just there's so many institutions. And because there's so many, you've got 70% of the institutions in the U.S. don't even have their own core systems and IT infrastructure. It's outsourced to others. You know, this is one of these, uniquely U.S. problems is that there's more banks in the U.S. than in entire continental Europe. But, you know, they're dependent on others to drive their digital strategy, vendors. Does this mean? Do you think that the U.S. is really going to struggle over the next decade to lead in this space?
Well, I'd like to think that the 107 banks that control 80% of all the assets are probably leading part of that charge. With 12,000 banks and 80-some-odd thousand branches still left in this country, it's really the fintech players that are around the ecosystem that I think are really changing the needle on what we're delivering. I think more institutions sort of further down the chain, 600, 1,000 down in, are really looking at their own development and their own sort of partnerships to really, make regionally or community-based waves, if you will, by launching some technology partnerships that, are a little bit outside of the 18-month-plus development that you'll see at a top five bank.
So listen, before we sort of go to the next break, because we're gonna invite some of the outside or ex-US people to join the discussion in the second half of the show. What do you guys expect for the next 12 months? What do you think could be really interesting to see in the next 12 months as a development? Maybe Chris, you want to start that off?
I think the priority for most is actually working out their digital strategy, and 90% of the banks, as I say, are currently viewing it as a channel rather than as core. I think what they'll find is that as the 10% who are starting to develop core digital strategies are going to hit them in the face a little bit. I mean, Bank of America using Cardlytics to do geolocating offers to their customers via mobile is an example of where it's going to start encroaching into the competitive game. And when that happens, you'll see a lot more banks suddenly go, hey, we've got to actually really rethink our strategy here.
Absolutely. Jim, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, sound like a bandwagoner, but I think we're going to find out in the next, maybe in the next week or so, or maybe in the next 3 months, what Apple's going to do, and that can be a real game changer, I believe. In addition, I think, as Brad mentioned, I think some of the outside players, I keep on looking at T-Mobile. and realizing they're on the same platform that Simple is on. They have 700,000 customers. They have 40,000 ATMs. They have 70,000 branches. And I just can't imagine that organization, given the lead of that organization, the CEO of that organization, standing still and with their mobile money platform. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
So I don't know whether you guys saw the news about Alipay. It was mind-blowing. I saw the stat in Mary Meeker's report yesterday, but Alipay has generated a mobile money market fund, mobile-only money market fund, and they've already raised $90 billion in assets in just the last 10 months. So anyone that thinks you can't do revenue on mobile or you can't get customers or assets on mobile, needs to have another look at that. When you look at Alipay emerging, they've got 160 million customers on this thing right now, and you look at the disruption there. Is it going to be 2014, 2015? Is this going to be the year where we start to see some breakout disruptors, non-bank disruptors, really start to take some big chunks away from the incumbents?
I think there's a very good chance. I don't see the banks, traditional banks, moving nearly as fast as I think they should towards a simple, easy design. I'll use Simple Cash or Square Cash as a great example of some of the easy design elements you can bring to the table. I'm just not seeing it very much in the traditional U.S. financial institutions. I think we're seeing more of it, as you said, overseas. But I think there's a broader and broader gap that's going to be filled by somebody.
Yeah. Ron, what are your thoughts?
I actually do not see and do not think that in the near future we're going to see the kind of disruption that people talk about. As a matter of fact, in another week or so, I'll be publishing a forecast of credit card growth in the U.S., and actually, the working title of this report is The Coming Credit Card Boomlet. Not exactly forecasting a boom in credit cards, but an uptick in a growth for sure as young consumers kind of move away from debit cards to credit cards in order to maximize their rewards and points. And as a new generation of younger consumers hits that young adult age, they're going to start picking up the credit cards as well. So, all this disruption in payments and move to alternative, I've seen a lot of speed bumps on the path to disruption and actually think that a lot of what's in place is going to stay there. It's not disruptive, but I think this actually will see a shift from debit to credit cards in the next couple of years.
Oh, really? Interesting. Alex, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it depends on what you're looking at and how you measure it. While I agree with Ron is that I essentially see a stasis for U.S. financial services over the next perhaps 5 to 10 years, it really comes down to the expectations of customers on the experience. And I think from that standpoint, you're already there, right? Take Uber, if we take payments in specific, the expectations of experience around payments and the varieties of payments and the ways to pay and who controls the payment, I think you're already at the mass stage in the United States where things like Uber, the Starbucks card, have totally altered people's perceptions of that game. So I really do think at the core level, banking will always remain banking. But, it's really what is banking in the future or redefining what that term means and that ecosystem, I think, is going to be the really interesting part.
Absolutely. So, guys, what really excites you about the next 12 months?
Nothing. I think we are going to see some new introductions of ways to use the phone more effectively. We're starting to see that with the camera apps and things of that nature. And I think we're going to start to see, as Chris said, some people really making a movement on geolocational benefits to customers.
All right. Well, listen, guys, we're gonna take a quick break. At this point, we might bring in after the break a couple of new players, but for Alex, Ron, and Brad, thanks for for joining us. We'll see if we can see how many people we can juggle on the line with you guys. But let's take a quick break and we'll be back. We're going to get Dave Birch to join us from London, and also Rob Finlay is going to join us bright and early from Singapore. So we'll be back right after this break.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio. Voice America Business Network.
Attend Payments 2014 to meet the forward-thinking leaders and disruptors who are transforming how we pay and get paid. Get a glimpse into the next wave of payments innovations and challenges through fast-paced interactive demonstrations, educational sessions, and a buzzing exhibit hall. Register now at payments.nacha.org. Payments 2014 is presented by NACHA, the Electronic Payments Association, the recognized leader in payment system education. The Payments Conference, transform imagination into strategic innovation. Register today at payments.nacha.org.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. It's our anniversary bonanza with we've got the whole tribe on today, and Dave Birch joins us from London. Dave.
Brett, hey, how's it going?
It's great to have you back, my friend. So, you know, you were listening into the show. I could tell that because you were tweeting it, as you do so often. Thank you for that. But just sort of continuing the discussion that we had beforehand, in terms of this environment, because we've got a really interesting sort of group on now. Chris, you're still on, and GM, you're still on. Do you guys think there is starting to be some regional or cultural approaches to this problem of digital banking emerging, where you know, the US is stalling? Is Europe going to lead this? Where do you guys see some interesting cultural plays where there's significant mindset differences, or significantly different approaches to the problem of this digital disruption environment? Maybe Dave, you can, because you just joined us, you can kick it off.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think when you say cultural differences, I'm sure that's true, although I'm not an expert on them. But I think actually it's the regulatory differences which kind of shape the roadmaps that our clients are dealing with at the moment. And so you have this kind of odd situation at the moment where Europe has a much more benign regulatory infrastructure for the kind of things we're talking about here, because we have the Payment Services Directive, we have the payment institutions, we have the European Commission consultation underway at the moment about regulated third-party access to bank accounts. So in a way, we have a more benign environment for innovation in certain areas. But of course, we don't have some of the US infrastructure around innovation. So naturally, you still see a big focus in the US, where people sometimes can get very frustrated because of the regulatory barriers to new business. But actually, if you look at the Federal Reserve consultation, I mean, and who knows what's going to ultimately come out of that. But if you look at the Federal Reserve consultation, if you look at the discussions going on about the potential introduction of immediate settlement services in the US downstream. There was more talk. There was a nice piece in American Banker about the idea of having a kind of a light touch regulatory category along the lines of the European Union's payment institution. So actually, there's a gap at the moment. What that means downstream, I'm not sure, but you would imagine that there'll probably be more harmonization. And I expect what that will mean is that you'll see more niches developing. You know, you have, you know, if you look at the sort of technology roadmaps at the moment,
in respect to standards or in respect to sort of...
No, I mean in respect to the business models. So, right. So yeah. what you'll see is more kind of commonality in the underlying pipes.
Right.
You know, people talk about this.
And that will define some of the business models in terms of how they're monetized and how they operate.
Well, yeah, and it means people will be able to. I mean, I'll give you a very simple example. So suppose you have a very standard immediate settlement infrastructure. I mean, I would say a bit like faster payments in the UK, but actually a little bit downstream, the Australian faster payment service, I think will actually become the new model for people to look at, because whereas the UK immediate settlement system was built on the old standards, the Aussies are going to build their immediate settlement system on newer data-rich standards. So actually the Aussie example will be better to look at. When you have that kind of standardized pipe, people can build cute applications on top of it for much smaller niches. So you can have effectively a bank that's for old people, or a bank that's for students, or a bank that's, you know what I mean? But, you know, they're running the same pipe underneath. Right. And in the same way that you see plays in the UK like Nutmeg and Holvey and so on, I think you'll see kind of more of these niches emerging. So yes, there's a cultural gap, I couldn't say, but there's certainly a regulatory gap. But downstream, you'll probably see a bit more harmonization around that kind of thing. In fact, I think that's actually an easy prediction to make, this idea about the Amazonization, by which I mean the exposing of APIs, you know, which some people think is underlying the BBVA simple stuff, you know, the PayPal Braintree stuff, you know, these kind of things. That kind of Amazonization, I think, is a very easy prediction to make. I think the harder predictions to make are the sort of, you know, we all love that kind of William Gibson thing. I should be shot for using this easy cliche, but it's the uneven distribution. It's what, you know, what are the things that you kind of see out of the corner of your eye that you can't help feeling are weak signals for change? And so there, I think I'd point to, you know, a kind of wider variety of things. I would say, for example, I mean, I don't know how you feel about these kind of, but for example, if you look at the figures from Braintree and Venmo recently, and in particular, if you look at the growth of Venmo, I mean, I think that means something. You look at Facebook's application for an electronic money license in Europe. I can't help feeling that that means something.
There's definitely got to be, you know, this has to build up to either some pressure on the existing system or a stimulus for some, you know, fairly interesting change. You know,
Chris, yeah, I agree.
Let's ask Chris. I mean, Chris is the SEPA guy, but you know, and he obviously travels the world as well. But Chris, do you think that we're developing sort of skill set competencies, that, you know, pockets of competencies in terms of practitioners that would drive some of this innovation more effectively in particular regions? You know, we talk about Silicon Valley, Silicon Alley in New York, Silicon Wadi in Italy. In Israel. You know, is this going to be somewhat defined by the fintech skill sets that are in local markets?
Well, I mean, there's definitely clusters of innovation within certain geographies and certain areas. But I think the core point, and it builds on what Dave and the other guys were saying, is that we're in a moment of vertical disintegration of banking. So historically, banks have owned the end-to-end manufacturing, processing, and retailing of the product. And that's being attacked by lots of nimble startups and new players using the technologies of cloud, APIs, and apps to really break into the market space. I think two of the most interesting ones, by way of example, is the announcement of Circle 3 weeks ago, which is an easy Bitcoin use case where you can just use Bitcoins as easily as you could use PayPal. And then you mentioned PayPal, and you know, Facebook has actually got PayPal firmly in its sights from a competitive viewpoint. Now, as those turf wars start to play out, it's really going to grab into the core of banking. And Facebook's come out and said, look, we're not a threat to banks. We depend on banks for the back end, which is where Dave was saying, you know, that there's still going to be this core back end that's going to be there. But what's really going to happen is completely new business models. I mean, I was shocked in Business Week this week to see that Amazon won a $600 million cloud deal with the CIA, beating IBM to the deal. You know, Google's now a car manufacturer. If we don't think we're going to see core banking disrupted by vertical disintegration, then we're in cloud cuckoo land.
Yeah, Jim, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned about the fintech innovators. I think the real differentiation is going to be those who can manage the big data. And big data is a term that frightens me only because it's misused and overused and everything else. But I've been at a lot of data conferences lately, and I think those organizations that can really manage both structured and unstructured data for the benefit of heightened personalization and customization of applications are going to win the game.
This is what's happened in every industry that's being disrupted. You've had the distribution layer significantly disrupted, right? And it's got to happen in financial services. We're seeing it with branches. So who owns the new distribution layer? Does it, you know, if because it's no longer down to geography, who's best placed to own the distribution layer?
Well,
No one owns it. I mean, I hate that terminology. Who owns anything? No one owns anything. It's really down to you live of the moment. I mean, Dell and HP had the PC space sewn up completely, and now they've lost it completely to Amazon and Samsung. Yeah, because it's moved. Tablet computing and cloud has moved to Amazon and Samsung, and 10 years, 20 years now they've moved to someone else. No one owns anything. They just have to try and compete.
It may also be something that's split up. You know, I look at what could happen if Apple, for instance, ends up being the go-between or the middleware for a purchase process. You know, they don't want to be a payments company, but they wouldn't mind owning the customer experience, and therefore they'd also own the customer insight. And in talking with Bank of America and a couple other of the big banks, that's the biggest fear, is that if Apple decides to leverage their capabilities from a standpoint of iBeacon and some of the other things they have, they won't take any of the risk, but they'll get the experience and all the customer insight, which again becomes the holy grail out there. If they own the data, that's probably the most valuable component. But I don't think you're going to own, you know, as you said, Chris, I don't think you're going to own the entire process anymore. I think it's going to be split up tremendously.
Dave, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think this idea about the processes being distributed across different kinds of organizations sounds sort of right in the great scheme of things. So the idea that certain things that are now done by banks, I mean, these banking functions will still need to be done within the economy, but they might be done more effectively by other people. That sort of sounds right. And I think, you know, people have been saying for many years that's a likely trend. To pick up on the point about what kinds of companies might do that, though, I mean, people tend to focus a lot on Facebook, Apple, and Google because they're, you know, they're the behemoths of the moment. I suppose if we'd been having this conversation a few years ago, we'd have talked about Microsoft. Before that, we would have talked about IBM. I have a suspicion that it's actually going to be the big retail and customer-facing brands that haven't yet really stepped into this space. But you look at, again, weak signals for change. You look at what's going on with things like Target Red, Starbucks Wallet. I have a feeling retailers will have a much bigger say downstream.
Mm. Yeah, I can see that. Listen, what I'd like to do after the break, guys, is I'd like to talk about the mint countries and Africa banking the unbanked with these cheaper smartphones, stuff like that, and sort of talk about where the outcome of that's going to go. So let's have a quick break. You're with Breaking Banks. We'll be right back after this short word from our sponsors, as they say.
it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's KONY.com/BK.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to the anniversary show, the one-year anniversary show of Breaking Banks. We've been on the air for a year. We've got lots of people listening to us. Just to give you guys some stats, you know, we have already this year, we've got over 60,000 listeners to the show. They come from almost 50 countries around the world. Interestingly, most of our traffic is they listen to the podcast after the show. While we have some big shows with a lot of listeners live, we get a lot of traffic, people downloading the show later. So that's an important part of our listenership through iTunes and elsewhere. But it's great to have, it's great to have had a really productive year. One of the things that's great about this, having people like Chris Skinner, Dave Birch, and Jim joining us on the show today. Jim hosted the show last week in my absence, but before the break, guys, we were talking about sort of the disruption of distribution channels and the fact that as we move away from those traditional engagement models, there's a lot of competitive forces, a lot of fracturing. No one owns the distribution layer. It's all up for grabs. But in economies like the African continent and the mint countries, nations, we're seeing incredible numbers of unbanked that are going to be able to be enabled through these technologies. Is that going to change what we think of banking on a global landscape? Maybe, Chris, do you want to kick it off?
Not actually changing banking on a global landscape. It's certainly changing the way in which we think about value exchange, in that right now, there's a lot of virtual currencies out there that are representative of value. We talk a lot about Bitcoin, but in China, there's YY, which is a really interesting development where you can gift value to people that some people are earning $18,000 a month from being gifted likes on their videos on an equivalent of YouTube in China. In Zimbabwe, because of the rampant inflation, their currency just went out of business, and now they accept US dollars, but they don't have change for US dollars. So if something's a dollar and you've only got $5, it's $5. Now they give you $4 change in airtime on the telco network. M-Pesa in Kenya is now transacting $2 out of every $5 in Kenya. And what's really interesting in that example, and we're seeing this in lots of others, but it's the one that everyone points to first because it's the most well-known, is that when M-Pesa started in 2007, 2.5 million people in Kenya had bank accounts. Now there's over 10 million. And the reason is that you've got an electronic credit history, which you didn't have before. So for the underbanked and the unbanked, we're seeing dramatic changes. And it'll move into American soil. I mean, T-Mobile, with their mobile wallet, are saying their target is the 68 million underbanked and unbanked Americans. And then gradually, Clayton Christensen's innovative dilemma comes in, and you see these guys upscaling. So we are going to see disruptive change, but it's going to take a long time to see what those new models and that new change looks like.
I mean, you've got 2.2 billion people unbanked in Africa. And it's got to be easier to bank them on a phone than through traditional branch networks with traditional products. Dave, you were involved in the whole M-Pesa thing. Where does the regulator's appetite for this really, where's that going to shape the growth of some of these things?
Well, I think, I mean, bear in mind that we started work on M-Pesa in 2004. That's a decade ago. And at that time, in some ways, Kenya was rather lucky in that M-Pesa was able to get off the ground, you know, before the banks were able to get to the regulators in order to circumscribe it. That's never going to happen again. So we have to find ways to engage the regulators and, as Chris said, you know, show them the benefits that this delivers. The idea that, you know, it's banks versus telcos is just plain wrong. And actually the language, I think, gives a little bit of that away. I mean, you call these people unbanked. The solution to people in Kenya wasn't to give them bank accounts. It was [S2] Right. [S1] To give them transactional accounts that they could use to make payments. And then, as Chris said, the histories of those serve as proxies for, you know, more conventional kinds of credit referencing, and then gets people into banking. And actually, because people had M-Pesa accounts, then they have access to savings accounts, and you get on this ladder of inclusion. So I think actually calling them unbanked probably illustrates one of the slight problems. To your point about the development...
Unmobiled.
Unmobiled. Your point, though, about the looking at these countries for developments, I think is very interesting. I don't know how significant this, but right now, Consult Hyperion's biggest project in Africa is actually in Nigeria, which is the TAP project, which is about sending stuff over mobile phones rather than money, sending coupons to people. So I think there is a lot of innovation in those spaces, and it probably has more application to developed economies than we might have thought a few years ago.
You know, when you see stuff like the Instagram commerce in Kuwait, the Facebook commerce in Thailand, YY in China, this principle of sort of fluid value exchange from node to node or across the mobile has some really interesting legs to it, to sure.
Yeah, and I think in many cases, banks, you know, the functions that banks crucially provide in the economy about managing credit and reputation and this kind of thing, actually aren't needed to get people onto the first rung of that ladder to financial inclusion. There are more flexible ways of doing it, and as you've pointed out, the mobile is crucial in that.
Jim?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that it's interesting you mentioned about the 2.2 billion people that still lack banking. As I think you know, that over a billion of those have access to a mobile phone, but I think, as we just referenced, the ability for mobile money and remittance, is the cost goes down by, I think it's 70% when it's using mobile as opposed to the traditional ways of remitting money. So, you know, it's a cost benefit, whether it be coupons or cash or some other form of currency.
I don't think people say
so, Dave, I just want to jump in because we've only got a few minutes left before the end of the show, 3 minutes. And we could obviously keep talking about this. Here's what I'd like to do. You know, obviously, this is the first year we've run the show. You guys have been regular guests on the show. You obviously respect your opinion. What do you think the industry needs from Breaking Banks as a radio show over the next 12 months? What can we do to improve the dialogue? Maybe, Chris, you want to kick that off?
Bring in Beats by Dr. Dre. Oh, sorry, that's been sold to Apple. I guess really to focus upon tracking the key things that in a year from now the banks should strategically, and the non-banks who want to disrupt the banks, should strategically be considering. So right now, you know, we're talking about the Internet of Things and wearables, but to be honest, a year from now we won't be talking about that. We'll be talking about the whole transaction infrastructure and how it's now 24/7/365 real time, all the time. So it's kind of making sure that it's always top of the agenda.
Okay.
Well, I know you guys get absolutely bored hearing me say this, but you know, we spend a lot of time on the show talking about money and payments and credit, but the biggest broken problem, I think, and you know, I'm going to say this, is actually identity. And we need to do something about fixing the identity infrastructure if we're going to go to the next level of digital engagement. Because right now we're slapping, you know, the mimetic echoes of a 19th century semi-industrialized identity infrastructure.
If you're lucky, you remember my article about signature from the.
Well, yes, exactly. I mean, that makes the point precisely. So that actually the biggest broken thing right now is identity. We've got to take some steps to fixing that.
You know, I would agree, I guess, with Chris on that and also David in that the whole issue of security is still a big issue out there. I can't believe the short memory span of the consumer about Target. And it's because they're covered by the credit card companies that they're not, you know, beating down the doors of Congress saying we've got to do better there. So it's a combination of identity, big data, and the ability to actually provide better secure transactions.
Fantastic. Well, guys, look, it's been a fantastic year. I want to thank you guys for your support professionally and personally as pals. And to the guys who were on the show earlier, it has been a lot of fun. It's been a phenomenal experience. When I started the first show, and Jim will empathize, I was so nervous about doing this, but it's just become such a joy. And look, you know, sometimes it's hard work each week to sort of keep the show going. And I want to quick shout out thanks to Rachel Morrissey, who's the producer for the show, and Randall Libera at Voice America, who sort of keep this thing running. But, guys, thank you very much for joining us again. You know you're coming back on the show, so this is not goodbye. It's till next time. That's been Breaking Banks. Dave, thanks again for joining us from London.
You're welcome.
Chris, thanks, and good luck on your book, which is going great guns on Amazon. And Jim, thanks again. Thanks for hosting last week, and thanks for joining us again this week.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah, absolutely. That's Breaking Banks, the first new show of 2014-2015 season. We'll see you again next week. Bye.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.